You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome one and all to another live broadcast of TPC this Saturday evening, April the 27th. Keith Alexander and I were marveling during our pre-show prep meeting, although we didn't actually get to any prep. We talked about everything else, but we did marvel about how fast Confederate History Month 2024 has flown by. This is it. This is the last call, the last stop for our series this year. Back-to-back special series wrapping up tonight here on TPC. I'm James Edwards. He's Keith Alexander. And normally we have these prep meetings so we can talk about what we're going to be talking about. And tonight we didn't do that. Keith has no idea what's coming up on the show. He doesn't have any idea the topics. He doesn't have any idea the guests. And that's really unprecedented. But I'll tell you, I had the outline. I've told you this before. Usually I spend about 3 to 4 times longer prepping for any given show than we do broadcasting it. So we put a lot of hours into making the things run just right and everything's well thought out in advance. And I had an outline. And at about 4:30 this afternoon, about an hour and a half before the show, right before I went to meet Keith, I just turned it upside down on its head. I had intended to spend the first couple of hours wrapping up Confederate History Month and then the last hour talking about the latest $95 billion giveaway of your tax money to Zelensky and Ukraine and, of course, Israel, our greatest ally. They do so much for us. We're going to do that first. I was going to do that in the third hour. We're going to flip the script and do it first, but we're going to do it in an interesting way. Another thing we've been doing each month, an intermittent special series on top of the special series, we're stacking them tonight, is our TPC retrospective series. And as you know, with this, we feature one of the very memorable interviews from our broadcast archives that maybe you've never heard before, especially if it was one that aired many, many, many years ago. And we're going to do that once a month, feature one of these retrospective interviews just to give you a sampling of the kind of shows we've been giving you over these 20 years. And we started that series in January with Drew Lackey, the former chief of police in Montgomery, Alabama, of course. In February, we revisited an interview with Anthony Cumia. Last month, for March Around the World, Zeljko Glasnovic, general in the Croatian War for Independence. He went on to be a member of parliament in Croatia tonight. And this is something that ties into what's going on in the Middle East now. And it's an interview that we did all the way back in 2012 with a sitting United States congressman at the time. He has since passed away in 2019, but he was one of the good guys, Congressman Walter Jones of North Carolina. Do you remember this one, Keith?
I do, and it did cause a lot of flap at the time.
It did, as that's not unusual. It did, and we will talk about that. But, of course, you know, we are friends with Steve King and Steve Stockman and some former members of Congress. This interview was interesting in so much as he appeared while he was a member of Congress. And not only that, he was in his 9th term in Congress at the time of his appearance. And he was a member of the House Committees on Armed Services and Financial Services, which, again, ties into what we're going to be talking about a little later this hour. Without further ado, I got to tell you, he won me over right away. Are you ready for this? All right, so this is Walter Jones, 2012. And, boy, he knew how to butter me up. Let's take a quick listen before we get into the issues.
He is currently serving his 9th term in Congress and is a member of the House Committees on Armed Forces and Financial Services. Congressman Jones, I want to give you a warm welcome to the show. It's, again, very much our pleasure to host you.
Well, James, I'm very excited to be on the show, and I'm a big fan of the Four Seasons. So,
did you catch that one?
Yep.
So how do you think we're doing so far in that interview?
Well, I'd say you're batting 1,000.
A little more on that. Let's have a little fun, and then we'll get into it. So he talks about some things that, again, are germane to the conversation now.
CDs, I play them in the car. I travel quite a bit in my own district and drive back and forth to Washington. So we've got something in common, even though I'm 39 years older than you. So
well,
anyway.
There you go. God bless you, my friend. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll move from friendly territory to what perhaps was hostile territory. You know, I wanted to start the show tonight with a quick question. North Carolina, you obviously a representative from there. Was that hostile territory this week? Did you have to batten down the hatches and hunker down or what?
Well, I have the east coast of North Carolina, the Outer Banks, Morehead City, Carteret County, Camp Lejeune Marine Base. So we stay on the eastern part of the state, and we do our own thing and let everybody else take care of theirself. And being a conservative, and I want you to let me talk about Afghanistan tonight, if you don't mind. And I tell you the truth, I think this state is looking very favorable for the Republican Party if we've got enough sense to protect ourselves.
Well, we will certainly find out about that. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned the Middle East. That's something we definitely want to get into tonight.
Yeah.
But before we get down to business, and speaking of good company and good taste, you keep that obviously in both music and up there in Washington. I've read that you serve on the Liberty Caucus, which is for people who don't know.
Well, I supported Ron Paul. I wish that the Republicans had been more open to his message and giving him a chance, but you know that the party politics are the way they are. I can't control them, and nor can he, nor can you. But Ron Paul is, in my opinion, I said it many times, if he could be the president for 4 years, I think we could at least get Uncle Sam out of the ditch and get him back on the right road for success. But
well, if my vote would have elected the president when I went in to cast my Republican primary ballot, Ron Paul would have been in there. So good enough. Well, people obviously have a sense of who you are and where you're coming from now if they didn't already. Obviously, it's not as though you're first bursting onto the scene, but nevertheless, for our audience, this is your debut appearance and hopefully the first of many to come. Eddie Miller, my co-host, was responsible for getting in touch with your staff and getting you on the program tonight, and I know he has a lot of questions for you, so let's just get down to business. And Eddie, I'll turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, Congressman Jones. I would like to welcome you from the bottom of my heart and like to thank you for coming to our program. I think we're doing a great service to the American people by getting conservatives, and I mean paleo conservatives, not these false neocons on.
Right.
And before we get into business, I'd like to bring up one more thing. James Evers hooting about the Four Seasons. I would like to point out he has a Jersey Boys poster on the wall right here. The Big E is the one that was responsible for bringing that poster back from Manhattan, from New York. They were having when the Jersey Boys were playing there. I brought him back a poster, and he has it on the wall in the studio right here.
Well, I'd like to see the Jersey Boys. I'm hoping sometime this fall they're in North Carolina, actually. And if the schedule permits, Durham, North Carolina, I would love to go. But I have one of the original DVDs of the Four Seasons.
Wow.
And it's when Frank Valley looks like he's about 31.
You know what? James would vote for you now. I wouldn't care. You know, he wouldn't care what you did. You get burned down in the White House. He would vote for you since you're a Four Seasons fan.
Well, it's good music, and it shows that a young man of 30 years of age and his wife, that they enjoy the music, too. And that's why I think I've read where the Four Seasons have sold over 180 million records. And I don't know what date it was that I read that, so it might even be more now.
All right, so that's how we started off the thing, and I will tell you a little bit about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff before we get into the hard issues, and I promise you we're about to do that now. But that was fun to walk down memory lane, a sitting member of Congress coming on. And, of course, as you mentioned, Eddie, he caught a lot of hell for coming on the program. One of the articles that attacked him for coming on the show said that they spent half the interview discussing the musical merits of Frankie Valli. but he never backed down. I think eventually one of the press agencies got a secretarial assistant to say, well, we didn't actually know James Edwards was the leader of the Klan or owned slaves or was a slave trader, whatever they were calling me at the time. But he never backed down. And I'll tell you this, a lot of people from the show, when they listened to this interview, they sent in letters. And Liz, we're going to skip this break. They sent in letters, and I heard from people that he wrote back to everyone who said they heard from him on the political cesspool. He wrote back a handwritten note, and there was one time Sam Bushman was in Washington, D.C., and he was at the Capitol. I don't even know if you can still do this, but this was back in 2012, remember. And Sam was going door to door, at the Capitol and knocking on the different doors of congressmen to talk about the issues. And he went to Walter Jones' office and he said, hey, I'm just in town, and is there any way I can see the congressman? And the secretary said, no, he's far too busy. His schedule is jammed today. And he said, well, I actually own the radio network that syndicates James Edwards' show. And she went, and he had him right in. And they sat and they talked, and he was a good guy, and he didn't back down from us, and he passed away in 2019. But anyway, we are doing this for a point. I like to feature these retrospective interviews, but we do get into some issues now that I think are tied into what we're going to be talking about the remainder of this hour in Ukraine and in Israel, the Middle East. And I'll give you a little more background on Walter Jones in just a second, but he took this was not a popular position at the time, certainly less so than it is now.
It's the most honorable Congressman Jones, I might like to add. It came to my attention that you tried to put forth this House Resolution 107.
Right.
And I would like for you to explain to our audience just exactly what this House Resolution 107 entails. And following up, if you don't mind, with your letter to Obama.
Well, I would tell you, Eddie and James, I have been so disappointed in my own party, quite frankly, and I'm proud to be a Republican. Let me make that clear. But all we've tried to do with HCON Resolution 107 is to get a hearing. And the reason that I introduced that bill was what President Obama did with Libya. He just decided to bypass Congress to go in and bomb Libya. Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul, Tim Johnson, Republican, myself, and I forgot the two Democrats that joined Dennis. We went to Jonathan Turley, who's well-known as a constitutional law professor at George Washington University, and we went to the federal courts to challenge what President Obama had done. We'll take you back just a few years before that. In 1999, I, along with Tom Campbell, Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, and about 20 Republicans, went to the federal courts about President Clinton going in and bombing Bosnia without coming to Congress. And I see all these wounded kids. I'll be going to Walter Reed next week. I've seen all the broken bodies, and I even regretted my vote to give President Bush the authority to go into Iraq. It was not a war that was necessary, and we see what's happening now. It's falling apart. You cannot police the world anymore. America cannot do it with their wonderful young people, their children, nor can we afford to do it. So we need to get smart with what our foreign policy is going to be, and especially when it comes to war. So my hope was, but we're only going to be in Washington 2 to 3 weeks, but I'm going to keep pushing 107 if I get elected in November in the new year, because it's time for Congress to meet its constitutional responsibility before we send our young men and women to die.
Okay, that I think now you're getting the picture, folks, as to why we wanted to move this to the first hour and how this is going to preface our conversation in the latter part of this hour on the latest news of the latest $95 billion giveaway to our so-called allies. Loved what he said there. America cannot be the global policeman, nor can we afford it. And what was interesting, Keith, about Walter Jones, if you knew his history, was that, first of all, he got elected for the first time in 1994. He went in with the class that included Steve Stockman, our friend down in Texas, who I was talking to, by the way, earlier today, and I'll tell you a little more about that in a moment. But that was when Walter Jones first got elected into office. He stayed in there until his death in 2019. But in 2001, he had bought into the whole narrative about 9/11 and we have to go to war. He even said he regretted his vote to authorize George Bush to go in Iraq. He should have never done that. He regretted that. But he was the one who caught so much flack. People mocked Walter Jones because he said he wanted to change the name of French fries in the Capitol cafeteria to Freedom Fries. Okay, that was this guy. And that just goes to show how much he evolved on the issue, not bought, not paid for. He had a true change of heart, and he ended up on the right side 10 years later, and he was on the program to talk about it.
Well, what he was actually a thinking congressman. He is someone who actually looks at the issues, mulls them over in his mind, compares them to experience, compares them to history, and makes his own determination. He's not bought, sold, and paid for. He is not following with a ring in his nose the neocons or the left or Jewish power and influence or any group. He is, like they said of Shirley Chisholm when she first ran for president in 1968, and this is the only similarity between Walter and Shirley, he is unbossed and unbought.
And back then, again, this is an ascendant position now. The majority, I believe, we'll have to go back to Brad Griffin's recap on this, and Brad was on with us last week, of course, but he's written about the latest giveaway, and I believe the majority of Republicans were opposed to it. Very few were opposed to foreign interventions back in the early 2000s, and not even Jones himself, but he was one of the first to kind of evolve into this new wave of House Republicans that we see opposing this kind of stuff. And anyway, I'll tell you a little more about some comments that Steve Stockman has made on this very recently this week and from my conversation with him. But we're going to play a little bit longer clip now, and then it'll be just Keith and I in the next half hour of this first hour, then second and third hour back to Confederate History Month. But pay attention to what this congressman is saying here as he was in Congress at the time of this interview back in 2012 here on TPC.
Jones, in light of the H.R. 107 in your letter to President Obama, do you think it would be appropriate to send a letter to the Pentagon to remind them of their oath? Because, and just in light of that, look, I was just a regular GI. I was drafted in 1969. I had to swear an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Not to defend the United States, not to defend the government, but to defend the Congress, the Constitution. Would it be appropriate, in light of 107 and your letter to President Obama, to send a like letter to the Pentagon to remind the general officers and the flag officers of their same duty, of their same oath they took to defend the Constitution of the United States?
Well, the problem is, quite frankly, General Dempsey was quoted this week, I have a copy, of saying that we do not need to put troops in Syria or Iran. And we've got people like McCain, we've got people like Lindsey Graham talking about, you know, get in there and straighten it out. I've talked to the military. We've had three Marines from my district who were in Afghanistan to train the Afghans who were shot and killed by the people they were training. And I want to talk about Afghanistan before y'all let me go tonight, because I'm going to tell you something. The American people ought to be outraged. We are financially broke as a country. We're spending $10 billion a month in Afghanistan to prop up Karzai, a corrupt leader that won't even survive. I've got the former commandant of the Marine Corps, I cannot say his name, and I'll explain that if I get any more time, that who's been advising me for 3 years on Afghanistan, and he says, look at history. You're not going to change anything. You got bin Laden, he's dead. Al-Qaeda's dispersed. Get our troops home and rebuild the military that's worn out and the equipment's worn out.
Congressman, I wanted to say, and by all means, you are our featured and esteemed guest. You take the time to talk about whatever you would like, but I noticed that you are not afraid to stand up to the president. That's been shown. One of the things that's so refreshing to me about you is that you've also shown the willingness to stand up to the leadership of your own party when you feel as though they stray from the Constitution. Before continuing on with Afghanistan, I'd just like to give you the opportunity to tell the listeners, what gives you the strength to swim against the tide when so many others will not?
Well, you know, I'm like Ron Paul. You have to stand in the gap by yourself, but you always know God is with you, and he will protect you if no one else will. And the thing is, I have seen so many broken bodies. I made a mistake. We never should have gone into Iraq. It was an unnecessary war created by the previous administration, and you can look and see what's happening there. It's falling apart. Saddam was an evil man. Yes, he was an evil man. But how many times did we prop him up to keep the Iranians from coming towards Iraq? Mm-hmm. And now that Saddam's gone, it's falling apart, and the leadership of Iraq is very close to the leadership of Iran. We need to get smart with our foreign policy, and especially in the Middle East. And I would just say that Afghanistan, again, is lives are being lost, limbs are being lost, money that we don't have borrowed from the Chinese to prop up a corrupt leader. And I can honestly tell you, I have been told from authorities, and it's been in the paper, so it's nothing that I'm divulging that's not been made public. But you can look and see that the Taliban, who are primarily Pashtuns, that's the largest tribe in Afghanistan, they make up the majority of the Taliban. They're going to be the future leaders of Afghanistan anyway. There's a book called Funding the Enemy by Douglas Wissing. I've got the book. I've just about finished reading it, and I've talked to Mr. Wissing. And so much of the money going to Afghanistan, we can't even account for. And it's the taxpayers' money. plus it's the taxpayers' children being killed and wounded for nothing. It makes no sense. And if I could very quickly read, I don't know if your listeners know this or not, but we have signed a strategic partnership with Afghanistan that will go from 2014, when supposedly the troops will be out, until 2024, and we'll continue to fund Afghanistan and have a small presence of the military there. And this commandant, who's now retired, that I sent an email to, and it won't take but just a moment.
Sure.
Will you advise me on what you think about this strategic partnership? He says, simply put, I'm not in favor of the agreement signed. It basically keeps the United States and Afghanistan to prop up a corrupt regime. It continues to place our troops at risk. It completely glosses over the realities of the political situation in Afghanistan. The deplorable shape of the Afghan military and security forces, no matter how we sugarcoat it, those forces are not going to be the combat ready for years. And until they are, we will end up carrying the bulk of the load of combat operations. We will become more and more of the bullet magnet. The Afghan people will see us as occupiers and thus the enemy. Our allies will withdraw, and we will be left holding the back with no real strategy and no exit strategy. I mean, gentlemen, the problem is we are sending kids over there to die. We're not going to change one thing. We're sending money we don't have that's borrowed from the Chinese primarily. We owe them $1.3 trillion right now, and our country's falling apart. I think the American people, if I can give the telephone number of the congressional switchboard, and they can ask for any member of Congress from Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, California, whatever, call and tell them to get out of Afghanistan. And that number is 202-224-3121. And that, again, is why I put in HCON Resolution 107. I am tired of seeing the broken bodies. I've signed over 10,874 letters to families since I made the mistake of voting to go into Iraq.
What I loved about that, Keith, is, and this is what we do in our retrospective series, we feature one time per month one of these classic interviews, and we intersperse some fresh reactions and commentary to it. When they voted on that to do another giveaway, this interview came to mind, and I remembered it being good, and I listened to it yesterday in preparation for tonight's show, and it was even better than I remembered. And you hear Bombardier Eddie in that. Eddie was actually the one who set this up, but he had a knack for doing that from time to time. He could go out and get these guests. But your mic's off. But I was going to say, the fact that Walter Jones admitted his mistake already two or three times in this, and it just really, the reason I wanted to play this tonight especially was that, boy, could we have used a guy like that for that vote last week?
Well, we needed a lot more than just one, but let me tell you, I tell you what is happening.
Well, I mean, you had a majority of Republicans vote against it. It was just, you could have used a few more for sure.
Well, then the question becomes, why did Mike Johnson cave in, okay? And I've got my own theory about that. I may save that for the next segment.
Yes.
But, see, our problem is that we have been behaving as if we are the head of one world government now for at least 40 years. Everything that we've done, basically, since the Ronald Reagan administration has been based on the assumption that we are in charge of the entire world. We are the headstone of one world government. And how did we get there? The American people have never voted on that. The American people, if that were proposed to them, would soundly reject it. But the people that are in leadership positions apparently want to use our wealth and our manpower and our natural resources so that they can use us to project power all over the globe. And it just doesn't work. There's one lesson, you know, I think it was supposed to be Freud who said that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. That's what we've done, and we cannot run one world government. We cannot govern the entire globe. Whenever we do, we wind up losing tons of money. But because we have the title of being the world's reserve currency, the U.S. dollar, we just print up the money. And before we had the Chinese buying up all the T-bills, basically providing us with the money. Now they're no longer doing that, and we're running out fast.
Focusing on a TPC retrospective interview, this 12-part series. This is part 4 of 12 for the fourth month of the year, featuring Congressman Walter Jones, a sitting member of Congress, when he made this appearance in 2012, and is tying into our commentary that's coming up after the break on the current situation. Stay tuned.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jen Gelber. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell told NBC's Meet the Press that he doesn't believe presidents should have absolute immunity for actions taken while in office. This comes as the Supreme Court heard arguments related to former President Trump on Thursday. McConnell reiterated his stance, which he made after voting to acquit Trump following the 2021 Capitol riot, suggesting that the former president could be held accountable by the justice system. He emphasized that it would ultimately be up to the Supreme Court to decide. A Florida Republican is no fan of President Biden's proposed tax plan. USA's Tim Berg has the details.
President Joe Biden is proposing an aggressive tax plan that could affect millions across the country after promising not to hurt the middle class financially. Speaking on Fox Business, Florida Republican Congressman Byron Donalds says former President Trump's policies should be restored.
Trump's tax policy has worked out for all of America. The federal government has raised more tax revenue since Trump's tax policy has been in place. And last but not least, why would we listen to the master of disaster, Joe Biden, about raising taxes when his own son avoided paying taxes?
It's now illegal to sell weight loss and muscle building supplements to minors in New York, the first state in the country to enact the law. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration oversees the market for these items, but it doesn't test products before they're sold. State lawmakers in Massachusetts are now considering passing a similar law. New York's law allows the state to fine businesses who sell kids diet pills or supplements that promote themselves as helping build muscle or burn fat. Protein supplements and shakes are exempt unless they contain another weight loss or muscle building ingredient. USA News, I'm Jen Gelber.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare...
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airlines. Travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Hey friends, James Edwards here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interests include contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America, Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity, The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism, speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are trying to make haste here to get into the current topic, but I thought that in part of our 12-part retrospective series, having this one was timely. Congressman Walter Jones from 2012 ran into, I've never told this story before. Believe it or not, there are some we haven't shared before, but I ran in when I was at the Republican National Convention with Sam Bushman. In 2016, I ran into Mark Meadows, who at that time was just a member of Congress from North Carolina, which is also, of course, was also Walter Jones's home state. And that was before he became Trump's chief of staff and got into all the trouble. But we were talking about Walter Jones and singing his praise. I remember standing in the corner with Mark Meadows and having that conversation. Well, one more minute from this conversation with Walter Jones, and then we'll get into a much more deeply into current events. Here it is.
I tell you what, it is so heartwarming to hear a man of your stature, Congressman Jones, speak so forthrightly about these issues. You know, the listeners of this radio program are patriotic, constitutional, sure, conservative, working class, middle Americans. You know, it is, I tell you what, words almost escape. It is, I'll say it again at the risk of sounding repetitious, heartwarming to know that there are still people. You know, so many of us are jaded now. So many of us feel as though we don't have any representation in Washington. We knew about Ron Paul. People are finding out about another one tonight, and God bless you for that. And this is something you've been very consistent on. You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly about your stand on foreign policy with regards to the unconstitutional wars in the Middle East. To 2007, you introduced the Constitutional War Powers Resolution, which sought to prohibit the president from ordering military action without congressional approval. That's right out of the Constitution. The fact that that could even be controversial shows how far we've backslidden as a country and with our morality. Congressman, we'll be talking much more about you and your work after you leave us tonight. Unfortunately, we only have a minute left with you before the break. Please fire a parting shot. Let people know how they can learn more about your work and, of course, support you.
Please know that I am a man of faith, and I trust God to lead me. I don't look to man to lead me. I look to God to lead me. And that's the reason I'm willing to stand the way I do. And I'm like Ron Paul. I'm not as smart as Ron Paul, but I believe in the Constitution, and I believe in the Bible. Please, listeners, help us get our troops home. Don't wait to 2014. How many more have to die and lose their legs for nothing?
All right, so we'll wrap that up there. Again, you know, when you have good ones like that, and Ron Paul, who you mentioned, and that was back in 2012 when the Constitution is going to save us. I've learned that since then, but to say the least. But I think back even as late as 2012, I still thought that there could be, perhaps if we just elected enough of the right people, you could reform this thing. I was encouraged by people like Walter Jones and Ron Paul, who were in office at that time. I've long since dispensed with that kind of thinking and become a little more radical, if you can believe it. But I'm just thinking post-America now. I mean, it is secession or bust, and we're, you know, anyway. But, yeah, I mean, when you have people like that, they either die or, you know, Steve King, they get primaried. Steve Stockman, they put him in prison. Ron Paul aged out. But, you know, there is a growing ascendancy of people on this issue, but we can't spare anybody. That's the thing. We need all four of those guys still in there, especially last week. So a quick comment, parting shot on what you heard from Congressman Jones, and then I want to cover the current events, Keith.
Well, Congressman Jones is like a lot of people that, you know, pop up from time to time. They're unusual. They are the exception rather than the rule. And there never seems to be a critical mass of those people in Congress. Now, I will say this. since Walter Jones's passing, we've had a great groundswell of people that are adopting the positions that the political cesspool took as early as 2008. And now what we said that was considered beyond the pale and scandalous and, you know, worthy of, you know, going to jail for, now you're hearing it from mainstream and quasi-mainstream news outlets. People like Charlie Kirk, for example, and others. But again, is this too late to save the American Republic? I think that it is. What has happened, you were talking about, you know, the $95 billion going to Taiwan, Israel, and Ukraine. And what does that signify? What I think that signifies, James, is that one world government has arrived. America is the self-anointed head of one world government. We think that it is our mission and our duty to right every wrong in the world, kind of like Mighty Mouse and Superman. And we're doing this because we seem to think that what happens in Afghanistan is vitally important to our interests. Well, it's only vitally important to our interests if we presume to be the head of one world government. We have a Jewish cabal, basically Jewish cabal of people that are running our government that are responsible for the problems with Ukraine, the problems in the Palestinian Gaza situation by funding, giving a blank check to Israel, and also the Taiwan situation. All of these things are the result of America trying to push its weight around, and we're pushing our weight around because we're doing the bidding of Jewish neocons like Victoria Nuland, for example, Anthony Blinken, and their Gentile shills like Joe Biden.
All right. Getting back to where we are now, and again, it would have been very interesting to see where Walter Jones, and he would have, you know, after the media attacked him for being on the political cesspool, he won by a landslide. And it didn't affect him at all, and he didn't cuck, and he didn't do any of that, and he stayed in touch. But we didn't have him back on, but he stayed in touch, and he was always very kind to the audience and anybody who wanted to talk to him if they, you know, invoked our name. But we didn't ask to have him back on either. I want to be clear about that because, you know, I sometimes don't like to wish that upon our people who are doing good work.
It's like a curse.
But it's a different thing now. It's a different thing now. I mean, now it's a totally different ballgame where basically conservatism incorporated is saying the things we were saying back then. And we have gone a long way to mainstreaming our ideas. And it just goes to show, too, with that interview, by the way, I'll just say this as a last word on that, how consistently good this show has always been. That's 10 years ago, and we've always been able to talk to people, if not on the air, it's behind the scenes, that really want to associate with a lot of people who are outspokenly pro-white, but we've always been able to do things the right way and have these things. And how about his accent, by the way? This is a coastal Carolina guy with that accent that sounds deeper than the Deep South.
He's obviously not from Brooklyn. That's for sure.
All right. So Brad Griffin writing about this, in the end, with that $95 billion giveaway, every single Democrat voted for Ukraine and even burst out in celebration chanting Ukraine while waving Ukrainian flags. 112 Republicans voted against it. This is what we're talking about. 101 Republicans voted for it. So more voted right than wrong. Obviously, we could have used a few more votes. So we could have used Walter Jones. House Speaker Mike Johnson. Have you seen how much the media is lauding this little pathetic wimp being compared to Winston Churchill, who is probably one of the most I'm not talking about the propaganda. Winston Churchill is probably one of the most despicable people in all of history. I mean, what he did, he absolutely ruined Europe. He might have cost the white world its future forever.
Look, if he was the primary person that got England into World War II, and he had an outsized influence in getting England into World War I, and if he had failed or just failed to act on those two things, England would be at the top of the heap. They wouldn't have had to give up their position as having the world's reserve currency. They would have had all these people. They would have had the British Empire still intact, and they would be at the top of the world instead because they were trying so hard under Churchill to remain at the top of the world. they've sabotaged themselves, and now they're the cottage by the sea.
Well, not only that. I mean, he rejected peace at every turn, wouldn't even consider peace, didn't want peace, wouldn't have it, wouldn't hear of it. And then now, I mean, forget the British Empire. Look at London. They don't have a capital anymore. It's gone. All right, but anyway, so he's being compared. The media lauding Mike Johnson, comparing him to Winston Churchill as if that's a compliment for breaking the Hastert rule and allowing the bill to be put on the floor without the support of a majority of his own caucus. All right, so, you know, you've got all of that, and, you know, they were invoking the name of Churchill, they were invoking the name of Reagan, I think, 19 times before the final vote, but this is, you know, predominantly older Republicans. You looked at the people who voted for this, it's 70-year-olds and 80-years-old, this is not the Republican Party of the future, at least not as it is trending right now, and of course, they are talking about the World War II rhetoric was thick, and they were laying it on big time, and comparing Putin to Hitler and Ukraine to Great Britain. You know, listen, this whole thing, talking about Vladimir Putin murdering civilians, you know, he's not doing that. You know who did? Your precious Abraham Lincoln. That's who did that, marching through Europe. You were fine when Stalin was doing that. How many millions of German women raped? We'll skip this break, too.
How about how many Russian people, 36 million, killed in the Holodomor and in the Gulag?
So everything's backwards with all of this rhetoric. I mean, Brad mentioned it was almost robotic. It was almost like it was just being something on a track that was just on repeat with each of these geriatric congressmen that were going up, these war hawks, and voting for it. And these chicken hawks, I can't call them a war hawk. I'll call them chicken hawks. These were the same people, these people voting for it, especially on the Democratic side. These are the same people that were hiding under chairs when these unarmed grannies with fanny packs and the guy in the Viking helmet came in. They were hiding under chairs, but they're gonna fight to the last Ukrainian, that's for sure.
And how many of their children are actually in the armed forces over there, boots on the ground, fighting these one-world government wars?
Yeah. So anyway, we're winning the argument, even if we lost this latest thing. And of course, it's not going to change anything. And this whole thing, Mike Johnson's a pious Christian. He's just a cuck. He's pathetic. Look at him. Now, who wouldn't want to follow a guy like that?
I really want to go into that in some detail because he was the key.
He was saying God told him to do this. And, you know he's the only thing stopping Vladimir Putin from sweeping across Europe. That was never going
to
happen.
Well, it's one thing to invoke Winston Churchill, but invoking Jesus and God as being your motivation and your role model, you know, come on now. If that's not sacrilege, I don't know what is.
Well, anyway, so it's not going to change anything, though. I mean, that's the thing. It's not going to change anything. It's going to grease the skids, and a little more money is going to exchange hands, and some more people will profit, and the war profiteers, and so on and so forth. But this isn't the latest CBS News YouGov poll. 61% of Republican voters oppose military aid to Ukraine. So we're winning this issue, even if we don't have the people in there to vote along with their base.
Well, it's just showing that the American people are impotent and that the government is run by the donor class, which tends to predominantly be Jewish.
All right, what do you want to say about Mike Johnson real quick? We got to move quickly.
Here's the situation with Mike Johnson. He was the key to this passage of the $95 billion going everywhere except to the benefit of the people of the United States. Why did he do it? My idea on this is that he is a fundamentalist Christian that bought into Jewish dispensationalism. He's said it numerous times that he believes that he who blesses Israel is blessed, he who curses Israel is cursed. This is not only stupid, it's heretical. Okay, most of Christianity for the 21 centuries since the death of Christ has taken the position that Jews are the first enemies of our faith, the most consistent enemies of our faith throughout time, and the people who crucified Christ. How could that people be the chosen people of God? They couldn't. But because he believes in that, because the other side got John Hagee flying around him, filling him with all this Jewish dispensationalist bilge, he decided that it was the righteous thing to do to give away the money of the American people while leaving them totally defenseless against the depredations coming across our southern border.
All right, I got one from Paul Craig Roberts, another friend of ours. Paul Craig Roberts writing, again, fighting to the last Ukrainian. Ukraine has lost almost 500,000 troops. This is the former Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan, a guest on this show many times. It looks like these aid packages will cost Ukraine even more soldiers. The the Prime Minister of the UK justifies the destruction of Ukraine with this mindless reason. Defending Ukraine against Russia's brutal ambitions is vital for our security and for all of Europe. If Putin is allowed to succeed in this war of aggression, he will not stop at the Polish border, end quote. Paul Craig Roberts responds, why is this UK Prime Minister lying through his teeth, or is it possible that he's really that stupid? No intelligence agency anywhere has provided a scrap of evidence that Russia has an expansionist policy towards Europe. Moreover, as the Russian government has repeatedly made clear by words and deeds, there is no Russian invasion of Ukraine. There is a military operation to clear Ukrainian forces out of the Russian-populated territories that seceded from Ukraine after the U.S. coup that overthrew the Ukrainian government and installed an anti-Russian government that persecuted Ukraine's Russian population. Everyone there knows this, but the West pretends otherwise. They pretend it's an invasion. Paul Craig Roberts concludes. It is the U.S., the U.K., and the E.U. that are turning a limited operation into a general war. Putin did not realize this would be the consequence of his operation. He misjudged the West, and he blundered. He should have knocked out Ukraine immediately and got it over before the West had time to intervene. So who is destroying Ukraine, the Russians or the West? That's Dr. Paul Craig Roberts of the Reagan administration. Great guy.
Well, what I would say is that we better get the Russians better get busy right now in doing what Paul Craig Roberts said and defeating the Ukrainian army right away before all of this money of, you know, $60 billion or whatnot arrives and they're able to string it out a little bit longer and cost more and more Russian lives. You know, there's no, when it comes to neocon war hawks like Victoria Nuland and Anthony Blinken, they'll never accept defeat. You're going to have to just pound the stake in the heart of the vampire to be free of it. And that's what Putin's going to have to decide. He's going to have to decide that what he's going to have to do is come in here, defeat totally the Ukrainian army, take over the whole place, and then he can negotiate any way that he wants to, hopefully with a newly elected President Donald Trump. But, you know, Biden doesn't even know what to order for breakfast. He doesn't get the freedom to do that, much less tell the government what direction it's going to go or if it's going to really meaningfully seek peace. Trump will make sure that he cleans some of those people out. Hopefully he'll understand that even if he doesn't name it, that these Jewish neocons like Victoria Nuland and Anthony Blinken are the problem, the primary source of the problem, the people that, one, engineered the color revolution in Ukraine in 2014, and two, ignored the Minsk agreement, and three, brought on this war by defying the reasonable request for of the Russians that we not have Ukraine join NATO.
Trump could probably be better on Russia. He's going to be really bad on Israel if he gets it. He may probably going to be worse. But anyway,
at least Mike Johnson will be happy. If we all die in Armageddon, as long as it's in the defense of Israel, Mike Johnson's down with it.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so Steve Stockman texted me this article. He was interviewed by the Gateway Pundit. And he had a really good quote that I hadn't thought about. I wanted to work him in on the show tonight, former Congressman Steve Stockman of Texas, but we just didn't have the time, and so we're gonna maybe next week. But the article reads, the passage of this $95 billion funding bill was very controversial due to Republican Speaker Mike Johnson using Democrats in order to fund a spending bill to fund Democrat Biden's priorities. The proposed pier is an allegedly just for humanitarian relief. One expert in the Middle East, though, is sounding concern and alarm about how the pier might be used. Congressman Steve Stockman was in Congress for two non-consecutive terms, his first as a part of the Republican Revolution in 1994, and again as the Tea Party wave in 2012, serving from 2013 to 2015. He served on the Foreign Affairs Committee and has extensive knowledge of international affairs in the Middle East. And this is what Stockman says. From his contacts and also understanding how the left in power works, what's being planned, according to former Congressman Stockman, and I talked to him before the show today, is a massive resettlement of Palestinians in the West. Here's a quote. The $9 billion in relief aid wasn't meant to actually help Palestinians who need it, Stockman said. They structured it as humanitarian aid because legally that definition is so broad that they can repurpose the aid however they want. It's a classic congressional con game with this funding. It's part of the billions and trillions spent every year by the deep state to accomplish its goal, to its goals, and most of it is right out in the open. They're going to use this money to resettle Palestinians in America, the same way the militant left uses Muslim refugees from Syria to colonize Europe. That is one hell of a statement, Congressman Steve Stockman.
And let me give you one more good idea coming from that. That is the most colossal miscalculation that Jewish power and influence has ever made. What they're going to do is bring Palestinians who hate their guts and Muslims who hate their guts into America and into Western Europe. And once they're here, you see what they're doing.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, you've said this before, Keith, and it's a great line. Let's just sit back and, as white Christians, let's just sit back and watch the fur fly, because they brought all of these people in as a third column against whites. However, these people don't go along with the program with regards to Jewish power and influence. So now you've got at all these elite universities, and not even, you know, the unelite universities or the non-elite universities, and now they're getting snipers on towers now to watch all of these college kids protest against the Israeli supremacism or Jewish supremacism, and it's just not going well for them.
Well, it's particularly worth noting that most of the colleges that are at the forefront, like Columbia, that's the most Jewish of the Ivy League colleges because it's there in New York on Manhattan Island. So it attracts more Jews than Harvard and Yale and others. Also, Emory is a Southern college doing it. It is the primary Jewish college in the South. It has more Jews attending it than any other college, even Vanderbilt and places like that. Well, apparently Chuck Schumer's been listening to our show because he has come out with a proposal. There was an article about a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks, in Occidental Observer about how the Jews in America are now getting the U.S. government to give them all sorts of money to fortify their synagogues and their schools and everything against attacks. Now, if they were really smart, what they would do finally is say, let's stop backing immigration of all these third worlders in here. But of course, they're not doing this. They're not providing all of this protection for Gentile schools or Gentile churches or anything, even these Christian dispensationalists like Mike Johnson and their churches. No, it's all going for Jewish synagogues and Jewish schools. But they see the danger there. And apparently, they're just not going to be denied. They're going to continue to bring them in and think they can protect themselves. Well, I guess they really don't think that these people have any sense, okay, these Palestinians and whatnot. They know where the source of the problems are in America. They know that the Jews run America, just like the Jews ran the Soviet during the Soviet Union.
What do you think about this heavy-handed tactic of militarizing these colleges? They're sending in the hard troops and snipers. I think Lauren Witzke, who I talked to this week, she's got a picture of snipers up on top of buildings at Indiana University, and you know, that's what they should have done in the 1960s. I mean, we tried to maintain some law and order with the state troopers, but they're sitting in the heavy hitters there to make sure that, hey, this, we're going to stop this kind of stuff. It's not anti-white, so we're gonna put an end to it.
Well, just notice this. Everybody except white Gentiles can protest like blacks did in the Civil Rights.
Well, they're shutting down a lot of this anti-.
Well, they're still allowed to do it, and also they've allowed you know, not just the Palestinians and the Muslims to do things like this. They've allowed blacks to do it. They've allowed everybody to do it except white Gentiles. The white Gentiles, look, what happens when we try to demonstrate? Charlottesville happens, and January the 6th
You know,
happens.
Donald Trump, by the way, commented on this. He chimed in on this saying, what's going on? There's more hate at these universities than there ever was in Charlottesville. I don't know if that's a backhanded compliment or if he's just trying to cozy up to the anti-Israel.
Well, it's the truth. You know, whatever his motives are for saying it, it's the truth. We have no rights in America. We are at the bottom of the totem pole. We are the people that everybody is allowed to hate and hate with impunity. On the other hand, these third worlders from the Muslim countries, the Palestinians, other Muslims, people from China, people from the Middle East, everybody except our people, our founding stock, are allowed to demonstrate. They have a First Amendment for everybody except us.
All right. We're going to put a pause on that. Next week, I'm not going to know what to do. We're going to be out of these two special series that have dominated our programming. And, you know, I love these 2 months. March and April are it's the best time of year on TPC. But we're going to have 3 full hours next week, back to business as usual. And we're going to start focusing on the home stretch before this election and what's coming. And certainly more conversation like this on this topic in the Middle East and in Eastern Europe. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.